The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11.
On the line now is former Western Victoria MP Simon Ramsay. Good morning.
Good morning, Mitchell, and good morning to your listeners.
Well, thanks for being with us. First of all, the CBD Task Force, there's an article in the paper today, a very interesting appointment of former Mayor of Geelong. I don't think I want to say any more, but interesting times ahead.
Well, I think the inclusion of Darren Lyons as a member of that task force is a good thing. I think, despite what you might think of Darren Lyons, and he is quite divisive, he's got a very strong personality, as we know, and has very strong points of view about a whole range of things, but nevertheless, his heart is always in the right place. And if you think of the things he did when he was mayor, from Christmas trees to the library, there's some good visionary ideas that he has. And I think him being a member of the task force will be very good to canvass ideas and visions about how they want the CBD to develop. And, of course, Darren was instrumental in getting the Mallop Street upgrade up and running, and always was very supportive of that green spine works that was done, or works that are still to be done, as we've talked about many times, in Mallop Street.
A lot of talk about the task force and a lot of questions about what it might do and how it might look. I think it's just got to the point now where we just stand back and say, let's see what it does and see what it actually comes up with. I want to actually see what actually happens from here, because there's been a lot of speculation. I think we've now just got to put it to the test.
Yeah, well, I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt. I think how they manage 31 members will be interesting. We've talked about this before, particularly under restrictions, but I guess if it's just a sort of a bit of a chat informally over the internet in small numbers, or getting some views put forward through online, it may be of use. But yeah, let's give it the benefit of the doubt. Let's get them to work and see what they come up with.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Now, mental health, it's a real concern at the moment with COVID-19. A lot of talk about it, particularly with youth suicide. There was an article today about 5 youth suicides in Geelong this year. So this year has been probably the toughest year for many. And just again, I'll repeat the lifeline number, 13 11 14. If you or anyone you know is in trouble, please call that number. But what do you think about what the government's response is, and does it go far enough?
Well, probably not. I did hear a little bit of Senator Henderson's commentary, particularly in relation to state government making more beds available for those suffering from mental health. But I know Martin Foley's just announced a further $60 million to go into mental health services and some of the frontline workers that are working in that space. But look, the statistics are still alarming, Mitchell. 8 Australians die every day by suicide, which is more than double the road toll, and these figures come from Lifeline on a regular basis. 75% of those that take their own life are male. And 65,000 Australians make a suicide attempt each year. I mean, these are staggering statistics. And suicide is the leading cause of death for Australians between the ages of 15 and 44. And we're hearing now, of course, locally, that there's a number of young people now either contemplating or have taken their life. So we are in very troubled times in the mental health space, and certainly more support that both local government, state government and federal government can give is paramount.
And reading in that article in the Geelong Advertiser, what was concerning was how long it seemed to take for the young person who's now unfortunately deceased, how long it took for them to actually get to a specialist. And they think maybe if there was some sort of intervention earlier, it could have potentially made all of the difference. So it does perhaps suggest that there is trouble with the availability of resources in mental health.
Well, certainly I hope that comes under the microscope by our leaders. Certainly the Are You OK program that ran for a long time and is still running is really important, because it's nothing like those people close to you or living near you that keep an eye on, you know, their local community people that usually can spot trouble or the first dangers of trouble in mental health problems with different parts of the community, are frontline basically. So those programs and promotions are really important to make sure people are looking after one another. And certainly at the first hint of danger signs in relation to mental health problems, do alert the necessary authorities, or at least have a discussion or a chat with the person.
Now, John Aaron, it's reported in the paper today, and I saw a post from him on social media last night. He has been diagnosed with Parkinson's, and whatever his politics or your politics, you'd have to say a lot of people really like and respect John Aaron, at least from what I've seen in the community.
Yeah, I always got on very well with John Aaron. I found him a very likeable person. Even though we're on the different sides of the political divide, I always had a chat to John when I could, when we were at dirt openings or, political functions, and he was always quick to sort of acknowledge whether it was me or others in the room and have a chat. So I was very concerned for his health, obviously, when he had his initial heart attack in the Geelong Hospital, I think, as it was.
Yes.
And certainly spoke about that very broadly and personally. I did send a note to him wishing him all the best after that, and sort of been following John's, personal health along the way when it came up publicly. But certainly I'm very disappointed. My best wishes go out to him and his family if, there's ongoing health problems for him. But certainly John will make his own decisions about what he wants to do in his professional life from here on in. But I certainly wish him well, and I hope that, he continues to live a healthy and long life.
As you say, he's been through a very rough patch. I mean, a heart attack and now Parkinson's. John comes on this program once a month, and our thoughts very much with him as well. We'll see what happens from here. But, hopefully this can be an opportunity to get the conversation about Parkinson's out into the open. When you've got someone like John, who's an articulate spokesperson, perhaps it will raise awareness of what's going on.
Well, I hope he is able to do that. And knowing the man, I'm sure he will. He certainly highlighted the health issues around personal health when he had his heart attack. And I understand, and from memory, I think he was happy to publicly state the way he changed, the way that he, lived his life from there on in respect to, nutrition and exercise and looking after yourself. And certainly with the onset of Parkinson, I hope he does draw to the public's attention, what the issues and impacts are to one's health in respect to that disease and how he's going to confront it. I think that'll be very valuable to those that are going through the same issues.
Now, aged care, what are your thoughts with everything that's been going on at the moment? Because it must be very tough if you are an aged care resident or a family of an aged care resident.
Well, I just wanted to draw the parallel. I guess there's been a lot of chatter both on social media and in the public domain about the Andrews government's responsibility in the hotel quarantine. And it was a total debacle. And as I said to you before in this program, it doesn't make sense to me that Daniel Andrews, who initially was seen since March up to June, showing very strong leadership in the way that he managed Victoria's pandemic response, yet since June the wheels have totally fallen off, and we can, revert back to the public protest on Black Lives Matters. But the hotel quarantine is an absolute mess and a total breakdown in good governance and, government responsibility and looking after the lives of Victorians. And it just is not clear to us. And I think that's half the trouble, is what went wrong and what decisions were made to lead us to this almost second wave purely based on bad decisions of providing security at these hotels, as well as, of course, the people involved showing very bad behaviour when they initially were to be isolated at home but couldn't be trusted, so they had to be isolated under security in hotels, and still their behaviour led to an increase in spread of infection. So they need to be held to account as well. But what's more alarming at the moment is the increase in infections and deaths across our aged care facilities, and how those aged care facilities, and many of them funded and managed by the Australian government are doing, because I appreciate there's been a Royal Commission into aged care, and I'm not sure at what stage that inquiry is up to, but the way that our aged care facilities have been managed, not just during this pandemic but previously, really needs to come under the media microscope, which I believe is probably let lie. I mean, there's 100 and I think there's 1,748 active infections through our aged care facilities and 172 deaths, which is about three quarters of the national tally. So to my mind, that is more of an issue at the moment, except rather than the impact of the hotel quarantine mess that the Andrews government's created for themselves.
It's a fair point, but at the same time, you'll probably find, and I don't want to preempt anything, but you'll probably find that the aged care instances of the virus probably came originally from that hotel. I mean, it was just that one thing, the hotel quarantine, that's probably sparked this whole problem that we now seem to have right up and down the eastern seaboard.
That, well, I don't know, because we're not getting much data, are we?
No, I mean, he's saying, the Premier's saying, that we have to wait for this inquiry, and he says the governments can't investigate themselves. Is that how it normally works, that they go off to an inquiry? Because there's quite a few inquiries now. There's an inquiry into what's going on with Adam Somerak, I believe, and an inquiry into this, and maybe more inquiries to come. A lot of inquiries that we're waiting on.
Well, there always is lots of inquiries, and of course the public doesn't see a lot of the work that goes on during these inquiries, and the governments of the day tend to like to hide the sort of machinations of the inquiry until they finally get to the report that's tabled in Parliament. But yes, there's no hiding the fact that the government is keen to shelve responsibility across to the inquiry, particularly into hotel quarantine at the moment. But hopefully, and I see the opposition is finally starting to demand accountability and transparency in relation to who and what actions were taken in respect to the hotel inquiry, even though Premier Daniel Andrews has indicated he's going to take full responsibility. Certainly it would appear there must be some ministers, whether it's Martin McCullough or Lisa Neville or others, who had personal knowledge of the management of the security services that were providing that security in the hotel quarantine. But also, once they were dispensed with, I think there was contracts given out to those airline pilots and airline staff that have had, you know, experience in communicating with public, put on quite long contracts to provide security. Now, gathered from reading from the paper, they're all sitting at home earning $2,000 a week doing nothing.
Wow. And in terms of the Premier's fans, it seems, I mean, this has been a very tough time for the Premier, as you say, but he does have very strong supporters out there, and some of them really got stuck into a number of the journalists that were asking questions last week of the Premier at his media conference after the leader of that inquiry said, actually, there's no reason why the Premier can't talk about it. There's no legal restrictions on what he can say. I was really concerned by some of the abuse on social media that was quite personal against the journalists.
Well, I haven't seen some of that, Mitchell.
Maybe a good thing. You're not on Twitter, are you? It might be a good thing.
No, I got rid of Twitter very quickly. In fact, I even got rid of Twitter when I was a member of Parliament, because we told it was very soul-destroying, and you tend to get too distracted from other things if you're constantly watching Twitter all the time. So I got rid of Twitter, and probably using Facebook more than I should now. But, look, I understand there's people at the moment that want and demand accountability and transparency and ownership of what went on with hotel quarantine. And they're not going to be satisfied by waiting till now, I think November, for the Chair, Justice Coates, to come to provide a report in respect to the deliberations they've had through the inquiry. They want answers now. And there's another part of the community that says, look, let's just deal with the pandemic. There's a lot of the leadership that's under a huge amount of pressure. Let's help and support them to reduce the transmissions and try and manage this pandemic, and then we'll allow time for retribution and full investigation of decisions that were made in respect to whether it was hotel quarantine or process rallies or contact tracing or genomic data not being made available, all those things. And I must say I don't have a strong view one way or another, because I think we need to know what went wrong with hotel quarantine. In fact, that was the catalyst for the second wave infections. But at the same time, I'm trying to allow Daniel Andrews to have some free air to get on with the job of dealing with the pandemic response, and not being too, or not being put under too much pressure or distracted from decisions that were made in the past.
No, fair call. CBD parking, I've always been in favour of free CBD parking, because I feel like it's a big competitive advantage that some of these other shopping strips like Packington Street and Highton have over the Geelong CBD. And the problem is always that you have to kind of guess before you park your car how long you're going to be, and then you have to rush back, and sometimes you feel like a criminal if they fine you for overstaying your welcome, and that's not conducive to walking around and having a look at the shops, which negatively impacts the retailers. There are a lot of challenges with parking and how you get the balance right. What do you think about all of this, and should they in fact bring back all of the free CBD parking, given that we're now back in this lockdown?
Well, it's interesting given the timing, because obviously there's reluctance to have too many shoppers or community members sort of walking around and driving into the city and wandering around, given we're under restrictions. So why would you encourage them to come and park for free if you don't really want them in the city centre? There's another point of view, and I take this view myself, is that particularly around the hospital, which is hopelessly congested and has been for decades, is that those frontline workers, medical staff, essential service people that do require a car to get to work and do require parking within the vicinity of their employment should have to pay for it. I just find that extraordinary. If there's one thing Geelong City Council can do and should do, is make free parking available to those workers that are providing us with support for the pandemic response, particularly, but more generally, I think those people are the particularly around the hospital that actually work in the hospital should be given some gracious in providing free parking so they can get to their employment, don't have to walk too far, particularly if they're working late at night.
Yep, and they're on the front line doing it very tough. I couldn't agree more.
And I think, is there not a car park being put in the proposal for the redevelopment of the hospital? I thought once they had the helipad up top, they were putting a car park underground, but I'm not sure where all that's up to at the moment.
Yeah, it might be worth looking into, but you're right, they should absolutely get free parking. And just to finish off with, you wanted to talk about Labor's internal polling.
Well, no, it's just an interesting note that I saw coming on Facebook with all the almost hatred of Daniel Andrews by certain sections of both media and community. I mean, you only have to read The Australian and watch Sky News and there's quite a concerted campaign to get rid of Daniel Andrews. But his internal polling shows that it hasn't moved much in respect to Labor's likelihood of winning the next state election. I just find that very odd, because you would think there'd have to be some pullback from the popularity wave that Daniel Andrews had in 2018, particularly in the last 6 to 7 months. But what I saw, and whether it was right or not, I can't verify, but in fact there's been some internal polling done to show that Labor would continue to win the next state election.
Yeah, I was watching, I don't have Sky News, don't have Foxtel, but I was watching a clip someone sent me last night of an interview with Shari Markson and Tim Smith, and it was almost like they were trying to outdo each other in terms of the hatred of Daniel Andrews. I think Shari maybe could have been just a fraction more balanced there, I think.
Well, Tim Smith is obviously being used as a bit of the hard man against
Andrews.
They love
him in New South Wales.
Your pardon?
They love him in New South Wales.
Well, he does more media in New South Wales than he does in Victoria. It's extraordinary. But look, I won't get into discussion about that, but it does seem odd that Tim Smith is certainly using Sky News as much as possible and probably getting a little more media than Michael O'Brien at the moment. But that might well be planned, given Michael wants to take sort of the middle-of-the-road approach at the moment.
Well, Simon, thanks for being on the program. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks very much, Mitchell.
Thank you, Simon Ramsay, joining us there, former MP for Western Victoria.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.